in July. Chaffetz says
she lied about it repeatedly. She only had one device. That was a lie. No classified material. That was a lie. She's never come clean on this.
I'm Chris Barnes.
The nation's focus squarely on tomorrow's election day, but in D.C., workers are already looking ahead to Inauguration Day. The Washington Post reports a chain-link fence was erected outside the White House last week. That's the first step in construction of the reviewing stand for the inaugural parade. USA Radio News.
It started at Bunko Night. A little tickle in my throat, says Sandra. Then comes Colin barking like a seal. That cough, that's the flu. And then it spreads to Edna, to Wiley, to Marjorie. But when it comes to your door, you won't be answering because you got your flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they're seeing doctors and sweating through fevers, you'll be teaching your granddaughter the two-deck shuffle. Shield yourself at Rite Aid before it's too late. If you're over 65, the CDC recommends flu and pneumonia shots. No appointments necessary, and they're free with Medicare Part B. Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
One of the NFL players who'd been refusing to stand for the national anthem says he's going to start standing up again. Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
Denver Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall saying he's putting an end to his protest and will be standing for the anthem for the rest of the NFL season, saying on social media the change is because of his hope for what we can become and not because he's necessarily altered his stance on things. Marshall had joined San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick and some other players in protesting during the anthem, saying they were protesting what they believe is unfair treatment of people of color by law enforcement. Kaepernick continuing his weekly protest before his now 1-7 team plays its games. I'm Chris Barnes.
A police shooting in Jackson, Mississippi as a man tried to run over officers with his car. Here's correspondent Randy Bell.
A man's hospitalized after being shot by a Jackson police officer. JPD says it got a call Sunday about a nude man trying to lure kids into his car. And officers found him on Valley Street.
He being put the vehicle in reverse at a high rate of speed and attempted to run over one of the officers.
Commander Tyree Jones says 55-year-old Charles Long was shot several times. No word on his condition. The officer who shot him is on paid administrative leave pending an investigation. Randy Bell in Jackson.
Be careful if you shop on Apple's App Store. It's littered with fake retail apps. Hundreds of fake apps have been created in time for the holiday shopping season. It's especially dangerous because it opens iPhone users up to the possibility of identity theft. USA Radio News.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Weather tonight, clear with a low around 53, calm wind. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 65. Calm wind becoming west around 6 miles per hour. Tuesday night, a slight chance of showers after 1 a.m. Increasing clouds with a low around 45. Calm wind, chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday, showers likely, mostly cloudy with a high near 58. Calm wind becoming north 5 to 9 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 35. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 57.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. You want to put the other mic up?
There you go. Okay, we'll start over. My name is Larry Cartwright, and this is the show Mental Health Matters. I am the host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments at 100 County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses. The commute is better that way, too, when you work out of your house, you know, from the kitchen, from the coffee to the dining room, you know, that sort of thing. But we try to help people who have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone who has a mental health issue. And we do it in various ways. We teach a 12-week course, both family to family. And it goes over what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain situations, medications, side effects. And it sort of takes the person taking the course and puts them in the shoes of their loved one or their friend, neighbor, whatever. We also have a support group, and it's for people to come and they can talk about their situation, and they're with others who have either gone through it, are going through it, or are about to go through it. Everything is totally confidential, and everything is free. We don't charge for anything. There is a, you know, we take part in various things like this coming up this Thursday, November 10th. There's a business home expo and a restaurant showcase at the Hunterdon Central Regional High School Fieldhouse. It is from 2 to 7 p.m. A restaurant showcase is from 5 to 7, so you can come and get a little bit of food from each of the vendors, and you can have supper for free. The admission is totally free. And if you have any want some more information or need to ask a question or whatever, you can call 908-782-7115. If you need something from NAMI in Hunterdon County, all you have to do is call 908-284-0500. Today, we are very privileged to have with us Dr. Monique Tremaine, who is the director of neuropsychology. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. At Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation, and Kessler is the top-ranked by the U.S. News & World Report for the 23rd consecutive year. Kessler Institute is the only rehabilitation hospital in New Jersey to be named to the prestigious list of America's best hospitals and is the leading center of its kind in the East. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm glad I went to Kessler to get my knees right.
It was a good choice.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, and that was within the last 23 years. So, but I have to ask you, Doctor, what is neuropsychology?
I'm still trying to define that for my family. Mom. No, neuropsychology really takes, it is the bridge between the brain and human behavior. So in order to understand neuropsychology, you have to know a little bit about the fundamentals of neurology and brain neuroanatomy. And then you have to understand how that applies then to human behavior. And then right there in the middle is, and how does that change when there is a significant injury to the brain?
Okay. Now, I usually ask this of most people, most guests. And so, you know, how did you become involved in this line of work? And the reason I ask it is because over the course of, this is September, started my sixth year here doing this show. And over the course of that time, I've had people say that, oh, you know, such and such happened when I was 10 years old and I wanted to be a nurse from there on, you know, or whatever. And then there was my category that I fell into with this fellas told me, well, I was married, had three kids, lost my job, had a car payment, had a house, and had no money. He says, so this came along and I've been doing it for 18 years. You know, so it's pretty much the way I got into my job. You know, it was the same way, only I had four kids and, you know, mortgage and what have you. In fact, I was almost thinking about going back into service, but, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really. So I was just, yeah, I was just curious how
so
you got involved.
So how did
I
get here today?
Yeah.
Good question. So I think probably my interest in psychology dates back to at least 13 years, where my New Year's Eve predictions actually put me in a psychology position as an adult, which I don't know how I came up with that. But then going through undergraduate college, you know, it really dawned on me that you couldn't understand a person's psyche without first knowing how the mind and the body work. And so from there, I took on a couple more majors and found neuropsychology and eventually got to where I am now.
That's interesting because, you know, when John, you from the rehab there who set this all up for you to be here, I don't know what he has over you that he got you into doing this. But you know, when he said, you know, that you were a neuropsychologist, and I said,
what?
You know, like, okay, I know what psychology is, but, you know, what is this neuropsychology thing, you know? And I was just, you know, so it was just, you know, interesting to hear, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, especially within the last decade, we've really realized the importance of that connection between the mind and the body. And our practice is much more holistic. So in the population that I treat, which is traumatic brain injury, stroke, acquired brain injuries, you know, oftentimes you're encountering people whose lives have changed overnight. And with that then comes anxiety, comes depression, comes fear, comes a general reaction to a circumstance that couldn't have been predicted. So, you know, it's important to know both what's going on in the body as well as the mind and be able to help people connect those two things up.
Sure. And, you know, veterans who come back, you know, and they're suffering from, I hate acronyms, but it's TBI.
The
you know,
TBI,
traumatic
blast injury, right.
You know, but, and then they wind up with post-traumatic stress and, you know, depression and, you know, so it's understandable, you know, how the two almost intertwine. You know?
Right. We have a tendency to separate out cognition, which is thinking, from psychology, but it's all the same brain. And a lot of those pathways that are disrupted in traumatic brain injury, such as the attentional system, the working memory system, are those same pathways that are interrupted in many of our anxiety disorders, depression, PTSD. So when you have a war veteran coming back from, you know, with both the traumatic brain injury as well as PTSD, you have a very complicated case in front of you.
Right.
And, you know, again, many of those pathways tend to be the same, particularly in more mild injuries.
And it's ironic because in studies from vets coming back, the biggest percentage of veterans who have PTSD without brain injury, but who have PTSD never saw combat. And you know,
interesting, right?
It is interesting because you know, then they think, well, why? Well, in the military, everything is regimentated. You get up X amount of time, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do that. And then all of a sudden, you're discharged and you come home. Now, you may or may not have a wife or kids and a home and a car and above, and now you're under all this pressure to make money or go get a job and above, and that all comes tumbling down on a lot of them. And it's proven that a lot of them have, there's a lot that have been in combat and they would bring that home, but there's a lot that don't, that have never been in combat and have it. And it's, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Could I ask a quick question, Dr. Tremaine? When you talked about acquired brain injury, what did you mean by that?
There is a distinction between traumatic brain injury and acquired brain injury. So traumatic, all brain injuries are, of course, psychologically traumatic, but traumatic brain injury specifically relates to an impact injury where there's been force. Acquired injuries are everything else. So stroke, tumor, multiple sclerosis, any brain anomaly that's been acquired since birth.
Okay. Thank you.
And that would include traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you speak to concussion versus moderate to severe traumatic brain injury?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the symptoms and
et cetera? There's, you know...
Well, what's the difference between a concussion and a traumatic brain injury?
They're all lumped into the same category, which is unfortunate because phenotypically they look quite different. So a mild traumatic brain injury is really characterized by a brief loss of consciousness, maybe a small period of confusion. But essentially, when they go and have an MRI study, those studies are generally negative. And so people are expected to be symptomatic for about, you know, a couple of weeks, sometimes into a few months. We've all heard about the sports injuries, mm-hmm. and those tend to clear up within a couple of weeks, especially in a kid who's highly motivated to get back to play.
Right.
In adults, you know, I think that a lot of times what happens is if symptoms are going to go on beyond those first few months, a lot of times what we see along with that are things like anxiety disorders, post-traumatic stress disorders. So we're working with an individual who initially is compromised cognitively, but also compounding those issues that may or may not have been there before. And so it's a different type of treatment that we really need to administer. And a lot of it is very psychologically oriented. And we really need to look at things like emotional and behavioral regulation and how to react to attention concentration problems. And then you have more moderate to severe traumatic brain injuries, which are generally associated with a longer loss of consciousness, a longer period of what we call post-traumatic amnesia, which is the brain, the person may be awake, alert, walking and talking, but the brain isn't on record. So they're going to have memory loss for that period of time, and that memory loss won't be recovered. So also what they're going to have are radiological findings. So generally there's going to be either blood pooling in the brain, tremendous amounts of swelling that are going to cause problems. And those populations, the recovery curve takes a little while longer, and many people won't return to their baseline, depending on the severity of injury. Oftentimes those cases tend to be less psychologically involved and more cognitively involved. So they're going to have severe impairments in memory, very difficult time concentrating or processing information quickly. So our approach to treating them is generally different than how we would treat a mild traumatic brain injury.
Right. But, you know, it's ironic because I know someone, in fact, she's been on the show a couple times, and she has TBI,
mm-hmm.
and it was through a minor car accident.
Okay.
And her head went, you know, back and forth, real thing.
Right.
And then a couple weeks later, a deer ran out in front of her, and she hit the brakes and swerved, and she go again. And then, you know, she had
repetitive
injury. But she can't remember the first 20 years of her life at all. So she says, and I believe her because she says, I don't know. My mother and brothers and stuff, they tell me, well, this happened, you know, and she'll say, okay. But she doesn't remember it. And, you know, she can remember what she did, you know, 3 years ago, that sort of thing. But not 20 years back. She can't. Her first 20 years of her life, she doesn't remember. And she's gone on, and she's a teacher.
Okay.
And,
fascinating.
You know, musician. And, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes down to McGuire, Fort Dix, and talks to the troops down there who have TBI.
Okay.
And she didn't want to do it at first, and then someone told her, well, it's the same thing. They have the same thing you do. She said, well, I wasn't in combat. Yeah, but you have the same issue with your, you know. And then she found out that they were it was the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the same injury, so they wound up talking to her and everything, and she winds up helping them. So that's, you know, pretty awesome.
Oh, that's really nice, yeah.
But I didn't know of anybody else that lost the first 20 years of their life.
Yeah, you know, typically what we see are people have problems acquiring new information. So typically I see less of the cases that maybe they've forgotten a significant period of the past. Mm-hmm. Generally, the situations that I encounter are that someone can't remember what they had for breakfast this morning.
Well, I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Yeah. And what's the date today?
Oh, I know I have to supposed to vote tomorrow and then pray.
Yeah,
you know,
we do have to vote tomorrow. Absolutely. and so, you know, we have a good amount of, like, for instance, college students, because college students are more likely to get injuries. It's males between the ages of 18 and 35 that are going to have these injuries. And our concern for them is, are they going to be able to learn new information?
Right.
And that really kind of is a hallmark characteristic of the brain injuries, at least in my experience.
So when you say learn new information, I'm mm-hmm. not clear what you mean by that. Are they going to be able to do well in their studies?
Mm-hmm. Those are the things we become concerned about. So okay. In the case of a college student, are mm-hmm. they going to be able to listen to a lecture and process information mm-hmm. at the same time mm-hmm. while they're simultaneously taking notes? And then when they walk out of the classroom, as many of us have had the experience, and everything is forgotten. So those are really the kinds of things that we can target for therapy. So harder to target somebody who's forgotten their past. Easier to look at, okay, how are we going to help people to adapt in the here and now to the situations that they're going to be confronted right. with? So a lot of our cognitive therapies are really geared toward that.
There's a lot of people that would like to forget their past, and I'm not trying to be funny, but it's true,
right.
you know.
Right.
You know, well, child abuse or, mm-hmm. you know, what have you, growing up, and,
yeah.
you know.
Yes,
but, you know.
There are many, many, many different paths to memory loss.
Right.
So usually the amnesia comes after the incident, or definitely during the time
right.
as the incident occurred.
Right. And what do you think about all these last couple of years, football players, with, you know,
see, now this
wound
is,
up committing suicide because
right.
of, you know, their problems. And
this is a very hot topic, and it really stems from more than just a couple of concussions. These guys make a career of getting their heads knocked
right.
every single
right.
day. I have treated a couple of players, and the one in my mind I believe was 52 years old, and when I evaluated him, he really did have the brain of a much older person with dementia. And so, you know, there is no doubt that, you know, and it makes sense when the head is constantly being impacted as a career,
yeah.
would make sense.
Yeah.
What about, you know, the neural pathways growing, constantly regenerating? Mm-hmm. How much hope is there for?
Science hasn't figured that one out yet. certainly we know that the brain has tremendous ability to compensate for pathways that have been disrupted, cells that have been lost. The brain doesn't, as far as we know, and there is controversy over this, but by and large, new cells are not going to be formed within the brain readily. However, those pathways or those cellular connections from one cell to another, if appropriately targeted, do have the ability to bridge each other and compensate. So depending on the extent of injury,
okay.
you know, neuroplasticity is what you're referring to. And for all of us, learning something new, we are actually establishing different connections in our brain. So every time you learn a new skill, a new hobby, you are changing the cellular structure of your brain. However, with injury, you've got a little bit more challenges because now this is a person who's had a lot of cell death, depending on the severity.
Mm-hmm.
So the extent of recovery, you know, is going to be variable. And factors like age, also level of what we call cognitive reserve prior to the injury. So how far did you get in school? What kind of hobbies and skills do you engage in? Those kinds of things can actually be very preservative. And that would be, you know, also in looking at the aging population, that the more active and exercised the brain is, the more likely we are to be able to stave off the effects of neurological change.
Do you find that some patients have mental health issues prior to this, and the percentage is greater after sometimes? Or
absolutely. Brain injury is pretty much a random population. You know, we don't get to select who has a brain injury and who doesn't. So we, you know, people have histories. People have psychiatric histories, and oftentimes a brain injury is going to exacerbate that history. Because, you know, an intact brain can regulate behavior. It can regulate emotion. But when there's been impact to the brain, that ability to regulate what we do and how we think and how we cope can very drastically be affected. So, yes, we do see people, bipolar disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and then they acquire a brain injury. Their pre-injury psychiatric history will more than likely be exacerbated. Even things like ADHD, you know, many children are diagnosed with ADHD. And what we see after a brain injury is an exaggeration of that ADHD. And then, you know, in addition, we expect, I'm more concerned about a person with a traumatic brain injury who's not feeling blue, who's not depressed. That tells me that their insight has been affected. So,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, I very much look at things like anxiety and depression as part of the healing and the recovery process. Right. Because if you can't go back to work, if you have a family to take care of, but you don't have the capacity, that should cause some anxiety.
Yeah. And just about anybody, even if you didn't have a...
With or without a history, that's
exactly.
Anxiety provoking.
Exactly, definitely. go ahead.
How do you treat the psychological issues that happen or are exacerbated after a brain injury? Do you refer them to psychiatrists, or does Kessler have somebody in-house?
Well, Kessler has a full psychology department. Okay. Now, many more people get injured than there'll ever be enough psychologists in the world. But what we do is, for people with brain injury, we have a number of different programs. But our psychology department really partners with our cognitive rehabilitation program so that we're offering groups for people. We also offer individual therapy depending on what is appropriate. And if our volumes become too high, we do have partners in the community that we work with. But managing the psychological impact of this kind of disorder is equally as important as managing the cognitive impact.
And when... what is the acute or post-acute recovery from moderate to severe traumatic brain injury?
Okay, that really varies. It varies based on age, quality of the brain going into the injury, length of post-traumatic amnesia, length of loss of consciousness. So what we expect is a person's brain is going to heal pretty relatively rapidly, never as rapid as people want. But during that first 6 months to a year, and this is as the brain is healing, the brain is generally swollen after an injury, and that swelling is coming down, and that takes months and months. You have new pathways trying to be established and compensate. So it's not like healing from a broken bone, which takes about 6 weeks. The recovery is really at least a year. And then beyond that year, the brain continues to recover indefinitely. But usually usually is at about the year time is when we start talking to people about, okay, some of these deficits that you have may be more enduring at this point, and now we need to look at adapting.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you said something about the brain, I remember the word that you used. When we were talking about recovery from severe and traumatic brain injury, you said you look at this, and this.
Uh-huh.
You said something about the brain, and I couldn't catch it.
Oh, okay. I may have said the length of post-traumatic amnesia, which is that period of memory loss. The one thing I omitted from that conversation is how much damage, how much bleeding was there in the brain? Was the brain compressed? Did we have to go in and do surgery? All of those things are going to affect the healing. So, you know, there are some people with more severe injuries who may never make a full recovery. Our goals there are to help give the family the tools to help the patient be as independent as they possibly can. A more moderate injury, and again, there's a range. You can have two people with the exact same injury, and one's going to recover,
right.
And one's not,
right.
You know. So the idea in that first year is really to give as much therapy as we can. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be in therapy for a year, but give as much as we can, help stimulate the brain to heal in the right direction, and then provide adaptive strategies should things not go
right
the way.
Well, how do you evaluate the brain prior to their injury?
There are things that we can look at. Nobody comes with perfect records and, you know, their IQ spelled out for us. And although so many kids are getting IEPs these days, a lot of times we do have some way of comparing. But we also have neuropsychological tests that are relatively impervious to brain injury. So what we do is we kind of look at a number of factors. We look at education, we look at occupation, we look at things like GPA, and then we take some of the tests that we have that aren't going to be too affected by injury. We put all those things together, and then that's that person's baseline. So it's an educated estimate of where they were probably functioning prior to an injury.
Okay. And is the treatment the same for a mild traumatic brain injury as opposed to a severe one?
No. A severe traumatic brain injury, like I say, we're going to be looking at helping the family adapt, having that person get as independent as they possibly can. A lot of times with these very severe injuries, insight may be dramatically affected. So we're not going to sit down with that person and do psychotherapy because their memory isn't really going to carry over long enough to have that actually benefit them. Our strategies are more behaviorally targeted. Whereas the person with mild traumatic
right.
brain injury, they're very more aware. And what I tend to see is people who are going to continue to be symptomatic tend to be overachieving, successful people with a lot of stress in their lives. And so a lot of times there are people that have to be on 24/7. And so a small decrease in attention or a small decrease in memory is going to have a much bigger effect. And they're going to be much more aware of these changes. So part of the treatment with there does involve psychotherapy where we're helping them adapt and helping them regulate the way they feel around the changes that they're experiencing. So really looking at two completely different types of approaches.
Okay.
Well, okay, I have a question. Looking at the brain under an MRI, how much can you tell about a person?
You know, if there is bleeding in the brain, we're going to be able to pick up that. If there's been a significant amount of tissue loss, we're going to be able to look at that. What we can't see is at the cellular level, the small changes that occur as a result of a trauma.
Behavioral?
No. Yeah, we don't have that kind of technology yet. There are certain technologies out there that are used more experimentally and for research. One such technology is called diffuse tensor imaging, and that's going to show pathology at more of the level of the pathways that can't be viewed on MRI. So there's a lot of interesting research around that, you know, but right now, in terms of the clinical population, MRI, CAT scan, that's what's available to people.
So you couldn't look at the brain of someone with schizophrenia. Would that appear significantly different than the general population?
For schizophrenia, what you're going to see is enlarged ventricles. So there's a space in the center of the brain that's filled with fluid. And that fluid-filled space in some schizophrenics, not all, is expanded. That's about most of what we're going to be able to see. We are not at the place in our technology where we can look at brain pathways and cellular connection and say, oh, this is what's going wrong. I envision a day where I can open up my laptop, you know, plug the person in, see exactly what's going on in the brain. And as in psychotherapy, as you're trying to restructure someone's thoughts and the way they think about the world, it would be nice to visualize those pathways. But we're years and years and years and years and years away from that, if ever.
And it can be used as a diagnostic tool in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, again, that's science fiction at this point, but I do envision a world that would have that technology.
I just have a quick question, and we have to take a break. But if mental illness, and I've been involved with this for almost 20 years because we have four kids, and my youngest son is schizophrenic.
Okay.
And if... Lost thought there for a second. It's a chemical imbalance of the brain.
Yeah.
It's been proven that it's a chemical imbalance of the brain.
Yeah.
Now, if a person has a traumatic brain injury, and a lot of times in mental health we say, well, it takes a trigger. Mm-hmm. Somebody can go their whole life and not have a trigger that triggers the mental illness and the imbalance that is mm-hmm. in their brain. And others, you know, a car accident or
yes.
breaking up with their wife or, mm-hmm. you know, girlfriend or whatever. Do you find that, or is it possible that the trigger in a person could be the TBI?
Yeah. We actually, MTBI, in mild traumatic brain injury, there is some evidence that depression can result from that. But I think simply anecdotally, yes, a brain trauma, and especially depending on the circumstances in which the trauma happened, not just that, but how that injury was treated immediately after. What was the hospital experience for that person? What kind of family support did they have? Did they have to go to the ER alone? That's traumatic in and of itself. So, yes, a car accident, you know, a fall.
Sure.
I think that can certainly be a trigger to bring something that might be underlying or that the person's been able to keep at bay.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Her plan will import generations of terrorism, extremism, and radicalism into your schools and throughout your communities.
Donald Trump slamming Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail over her immigration plan that would bring significant numbers of Muslims into the United States.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
time your eyes remain, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambee's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambee's Purely Delicious Ice Cream, Gelato, and Sorbet, made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton. Pambee's Purely Delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey, and we are very privileged today to have with us Monique Tremaine, who is a PhD and director of the neuropsychologically. Neuropsychology? There you go. Okay, there we go. At Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation. And we've been talking about various traumatic brain injuries and so on and so forth. And do you find that if someone... How can I say this? If someone has family support, is it easier for them to recover than the person who has nobody?
I can tell you this, a family can make or break treatment, you know. So we're talking in terms of degrees. You know, certainly somebody with a moderate brain injury can have the best family in the world. And, you know... they may or may not get full recovery. Mm-hmm. However, that collaborative family that really understands or takes the time to learn and understand about the injury, that patient, regardless of how much measurable improvement they're going to get, is much, much better off. Whereas a family that's not as supportive, and in a lot of cases, after the physical injuries go away, after, you know, any bruising or scarring is gone, any broken bones have healed, and that brain injury is still there, oftentimes patients will tell me nobody believes them about their symptoms because you can't see it. And so, you know, families can really... turn things one way or the other. And then certainly a person without support, I mean, just think about navigating insurance companies and getting it, you know, or looking at long and short-term disability and making those applications. If you have a brain injury, it's going to be very hard for you to, you know, kind of coordinate your day, let alone navigate all the complexities of that. Right. So for that reason alone, plus many, many others, someone with support is going to do better. It's not just the cognition that's impacted, but these are life injuries. Right. They affect every single piece of mm-hmm. someone's existence.
Right, right. What is cognition?
Cognition is, simply put, it is our thinking. It's how our brain reasons, engages in abstract thought, remembers, pays attention, processes things in space. It's all those things that we do that kind of make us human and unique from animals. So your brain doesn't, you know, your dog doesn't anticipate when you're getting home, believe it or not. They may seem like good problem solvers, but, you know, they're limited. Capacity for language, these are all uniquely human traits. So cognition is the study of human thought and how those different aspects you know, such as attention, concentration, memory, come together to form meaningful and goal-directed behavior.
Okay, then what is cognitive rehabilitation?
It's putting all that back together. I actually had a patient who used to say, it feels like I had a puzzle that I was working on and somebody threw all the pieces all over and I'm trying to put them back together, but somebody ran the vacuum and the dog got a couple of the pieces.
Yeah.
And So it really is helping a person to either develop strategies to compensate for something that's lacking, or, you know, again, by practice and repetition, being able to change something that is not working properly. So some of the things we teach would be like problem solving, giving people the pieces to put together to be able to arrive at a solution, because the brain isn't doing that for them anymore.
Okay. And so you, by the way, said, do you like, how would you go about doing this then?
Is medication involved in everything?
We don't have any magic medication at this point. So some medications can be effective. And certainly if there is psychiatric overlay, that can certainly be helpful. If the brain isn't stimulated to be able to arouse itself well enough, there are certain psychostimulants we can give. But our medications are really limited. But yes, there is always hopefully good oversight from physiatry. And then in terms of actual techniques, that's a little harder. And each, you know, everyone that comes through our program is given an individualized evaluation. And that way we can look at the particular aspects of the thought and of the person, the personality, that have been affected. And from there, as best as we can, we're going to tailor and fine-tune activities that we do to that skill that's been lost. So, for instance, let's say you have a person with navigational difficulty, and their main goal is to return to drive. Well, how can we use technology? How can we use practice? And how can we use things like developing environmental cues to be able to have that person function better in that particular skill area?
Right. Now, cognitive rehabilitation, that can be used for other illnesses too, can it?
You know, there's a lot of cognitive rehabilitation is done in mental health.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yes, it is. It requires a different kind of specialty.
Right, but it's pretty similar to the, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar. And then, you know, there's this idea of cognitive enhancement. We can all benefit from learning strategies on how to be more efficient. And then particularly as people age, what kinds of things can we build into the environment? What kinds of things need to be put in place? I mean, think about it, just this simple managing passwords. Like, you know.
It's not simple.
Yeah. And these are, you know, so these are things that, we're used to working out the physical body and exercising the physical body. And now we're really understanding how much it is important to also exercise the brain, but also to incorporate those other elements such as nutrition, hydration, exercise. Those are all things that are actually going to contribute to recovery in an injured person, but just overall wellness in someone who hasn't been injured.
Yeah, because, you know, some people can do some exercises and some, you know,
and
standing up and walking from here to me, from me to you is tough, you know, for some people.
Right.
So,
well, I think that's the importance of tailoring things a little bit individually as best we can. You know, not everybody uses technology. Technology these days is great in helping people compensate for these deficits, but not everyone is going to take to technology. So the idea is to really figure out what is going to work for that particular person and also considering the environment that they're going back into.
Just a question on the treatment, you know, getting a mental workout. Does Kessler sometimes sit down with people and have them do crossword puzzles and things like that? Or that basic a treatment?
You know, it's a little bit more than crossword puzzles. So the way we look at things, so a crossword puzzle is going to look at your language memory and your a little bit of your problem solving. But what we try to do is either select things that are going to target a lot of cognitive skills at once. So think about playing an instrument. Okay. That's going to require your visual spatial ability. That's going to require your motor movements. That's going to require memory. You're going to have to learn from your own feedback whether you sound good or not. So what we really try to do is give people activities that are going to use all of those skills, but then sometimes we may isolate a skill. So let's say I've got somebody who has a problem with divided attention. You could pull out a word search, but you might have them search for two or three words at a time rather than just one. So you can take things, you know, games that we play in everyday life, and you can modify them. But, you know, the difference between going online and doing a cognitive program online versus coming to a program is that individual tailoring. Because a lot of people think word searches, you know, and if you do enough of these, even though the right side of the brain may have been affected and a word search is going to target the left side of the brain, they think, well, this is really going to help, when maybe building a model car or putting together some Legos may be better. And, you know, so, I mean, that's pretty simplistic at that point.
Right.
But it's that targeting those particular cognitive skills that have been identified is, you know, kind of the difference between doing a home program or an online program versus.
Well, don't you find that sometimes the simplistic method works on some with some people?
You know, I tell people to play with their grandchildren. You know, do you, or parents, do you have a 6 or 7 year old? You know, play games, have fun with it, learn.
My youngest granddaughter is 21. I don't think
no,
we want to.
That's not going to work.
That's not going to work. You know, we might play poker or something. You know,
right,
but
yeah,
other than that, you know,
what I was thinking. But you know, think it. People with impaired cognition have difficulty just managing their regular lives. Planning a vacation is an excellent cognitive strategy. You know, there's a lot. Think about what's involved in that. Going to the grocery store. So, you know, these are injuries that affect our everyday lives. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree that everyday activities are going to be helpful. What you don't want is that person either not engaging in activity and allowing perhaps the family to take over. Some people are so socially isolated after these injuries that they don't leave their house. They don't maintain their friendships. If there are language problems, they don't like to get on the phone and talk. So part of it is also keeping people tied into the community.
Okay. Speaking of community, you mentioned something about Flemington that you've just brought neuropsychology to the Kessler in Flemington. Is the Kessler in Flemington new, or is it just the neuropsychology part that's new?
Actually, they're in a brand new space, but they're not a new so our three major Kessler hubs, if for lack of better words, are in West Orange, Chester, and Saddlebrook. And those three sites have had a strong cognitive rehabilitation and neuropsychology services for many, many years now. Flemington, with beginning, I believe, in July of this year, it is the first time that this site will be able to provide psychological services and cognitive rehabilitation.
And that's where you're going to work out of?
Yes. Well, partly. Okay. I'm mostly in West Orange, but yes, this is
right,
my department.
Back and forth.
People within
yeah.
my department.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. We've got about 2 minutes left. Do you have time flies when you're having fun? If someone wanted to get some information, is there a phone number or an email address that you could give out to them?
Absolutely. I'm going to give, well, I can give my email address. It's MTREMAINE at Kessler-rehab.com. And if I can remember my phone number, it's 973 324-3634, and that will bring you to someone who can give more information on the
okay.
program.
And the Flemington Kessler is on Route 31 across from the hospital, correct?
Right across from Hunterdon Medical okay. Center.
Okay. I just want to say it's been a pleasure. I really, you know, enjoyed having you on. And I'll have to reach out to John again down the road and have you come back.
Anytime.
I told him he could come with you, but yeah, he says, no. Yeah, I did.
I think he's off today. Yeah.
Well, he supposedly hurt his back or something.
Oh,
I don't
no.
know, too. I said to his wife, I says, he's in rehab. What are you, is he supposed to rehab himself there? But anyway, you've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back again next week. Don't forget, tomorrow is election day. So vote. Regardless of who you vote for, just get out there and vote. And
thank you very much for coming. Very, very informative.
Friday is Veterans Day, so if you happen to see a vet, say thank you. We'll see you again next week. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Our plan will import generations of terrorism, extremism, and radicalism into your schools and throughout your communities.
Donald Trump slamming Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail over her immigration plan that would bring significant numbers of Muslims into the United States. Meanwhile, on the Clinton side, Bernie Sanders out speaking in favor of Hillary, saying she's a candidate that would bring the nation together.
In these difficult times, we need a president who is going to bring us together, not divide us up.
Jury selection in the federal trial of the man charged in the massacre at a Charleston, South Carolina church on hold. The judge is holding a closed-door hearing with Dylan Roof and his defense attorneys. Jury selection now set to begin on Wednesday. Roof is charged with gunning down parishioners at a black church in June 2015. USA Radio News.
Hey everybody, singer-songwriter Brett Watts here. If you're like me, always on the go, and don't have time to stay as healthy as we would like by eating all the right foods, well, I found incredible...